Today's interview is with Brenda Florida, and I had a delightful conversation with her. She is quite something. She is about she's 61, so a little bit younger than me, but she has very similar path in that she worked in a, you know, had a real job, as we say, and then she realized she had this calling to coaching. And so very late in life, she was in her, I think if you do the math, it was around age 54, and I started at 55. And so she wanted to do that, and she signed up to get certified. And in the meantime, she lost her job and she ended up being homeless for 2 years, couch surfing, as she describes it, basically living out of her car. So she has quite the story. And I love the story because it just shows how much she was convicted and how much she really felt called to do what she was going to do. And she was determined to do it no matter what. And so she tells her story, and it's really great. She also has a podcast. She specializes in facilitating the transformation from people pleasing into self-love. And as she says it, when we love ourselves, we can give to others out of our overflow. Isn't that great? It's like, fill your cup first and then you can fill others. That's what she stands for. And she talks about, and her podcast is all about that as well. Join me in this conversation. It was great. I hope you enjoyed as much as I enjoyed talking to her.
Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And today my guest is Brenda Florida. And Brenda does not live in Florida. She lives in California, another warm place. So that's great. And if you're not on my YouTube channel, I just have to describe that she has like purple tint in her hair on silver, and it's so amazingly gorgeous. And she's got a match, like a top that matches it. And I pointed out her hair because I have this desire to get my hair like dipped in blue. I'm so unlike me. I mean, I'm not like usually that, but I have had this thought, and maybe I'll be bold enough to do it. You'll have to tell me when you started doing that. Mm-hmm. Yes. So she has her own podcast. So, and I'll just tell you right off the bat, it's called Liberate Your People Pleaser. So if you are either reformed people pleaser or you are struggling with people pleasing, I think Brenda will have some probably tips for you. So mm-hmm. Welcome to the program, Brenda.
Thank you, Laurie, so much. I'm so happy to be here. And I totally encourage you to dip that hair in blue or whatever color. You know, those of us who are lucky enough to have gray or silver or white, I have a lot of white in my hair. It makes it much easier to pick up color like that in your hair color than somebody who's a brunette or, you know, has naturally darker hair. The silver and white really picks up the colors and it holds it better. That's my experience anyway. So I love having purple hair. I've been doing it for about 3 or 4 years. Well, maybe like three. And my website, I've got tons of pictures. I love it.
Yeah. So were you pretty white when you had it done?
I was pretty white. Okay. I'm gray up through the center section. I'm like a reverse skunk, right? I'm instead of white on the top, I'm white on the sides, and I'm a little darker through the top, but just like salt and peppery. Anyway, it picks it up beautifully and I love it. And purple is my favorite color.
That's my sister's favorite color.
I match my clothes a lot, but just because they're all my favorite color, you know? Yeah. So when I have green on, I do not have green hair. So the hair stays purple, the clothes can change.
That's awesome. Well, you look very stylish too. Thank you. I have style envy because I have no style. What's the word? Knack. There's not a stylish bone in my body. But anyways, yeah. So tell me about how you got started with wanting to do a podcast about people pleasing. I'm guessing that you struggled with that.
Yeah. So I really, when I look back on it, it's much easier to see in hindsight, but I was really set up from my birth to become a people pleaser. You know, the way I think about people pleasing is, first of all, it's a coping mechanism. And we all have stress as kids. We have things that happen to us, traumas. You know, even if we have a reasonably good childhood, there's still things that happen that traumatize us as an individual that maybe to somebody else would be nothing, you know? And so we create these coping skills, whether it's like the class clown or, you know, we're super shy, you know, we withdraw and go within whatever. And people pleasing is just one of those things. And so I had a mother who wasn't incredibly emotionally available to me. She loved me very much and I love her, but, you know, she just had her own stuff. And I ended up as sort of a coping device for that, doing things to make other people happy. That was just how I made my way in the world. How I ended up getting the love I wanted was by doing for others. And so prioritizing for others. Well, it's great when you're a kid, it's fine. You know, it got me through what I needed to get through, as all of our coping mechanisms do. You know, they serve us when they get started. And then you just get to the point where you realize it's not really serving you anymore.
Right. But it's ingrained.
It's ingrained. Yeah. And so my perspective about people pleasing is not that it's a problem, not like you need to fix this, something like that. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just a habit. It's a habit you picked up that you don't want to have anymore, you know, and it's just time to break that habit because you can tell it's not serving you. And yes, that's always easier said than done, like any other habit that we try to create or break, right? Like if you want to stop eating candy every night, right before you go to bed, you know, or whatever it is, it's very hard to stop and start a pattern. And there's a lot of scientific reasons for that and a lot of emotional reasons for that. But that's really my approach to people pleasing, because once we get in that habit of prioritizing others and using all of our gorgeous skills of empathy, and usually we're, you know, very hard workers, we're very good at solving problems, we have a real desire to serve and make the world a better place. Nothing wrong with any of that. Don't stop that, right? But we just need to turn it on ourselves first, be empathetic about ourselves, how we're feeling, you know, not lose it or prioritize it with somebody else. And then we can serve out of a cup that's overflowing. And one of the key traits to knowing sort of whether or not you're a people pleaser is that people pleasers are often exhausted, because it's very challenging to have a boundary of no, because you've gotten in this habit of equating, when I prioritize others, that's when I get my needs met. I'm going to feel loved, or maybe somebody will do something for me or something like that. So that's kind of a brief rundown on my perspective of people pleasing. And so every week in the podcast, in fact, in August, I'm going to hit my 100th episode. I share some kind of practical tool. I'm very both practical and aspirational in my approach to my life. And, you know, probably not surprising, my coaching, so that it's not just a great idea that you should stop prioritizing others and prioritize yourself. We have to get to, okay, now how do I do that?
Yeah.
How do tactical. I actually break yeah. that habit?
Yeah. So you mentioned coaching. So how did you, because I know based on our conversation before mm-hmm. I hit record that you had a career. And it wasn't coaching, much like me. And so we transitioned and you pivoted late in life, like I did, which I love, because I think that inspires other people to take action on something that is calling to them. So can you tell me, like, how did you get into coaching? What was that calling? How did you know it was time to do something different?
A lot of it was just my own growth trajectory. I started in my own, I would say my own personal growth in my late 20s. I was pretty unconscious, pretty unaware up to that point, and very much deep in the people pleasing of just being who everybody wanted me to be. And I crashed and burned. I'm a very optimistic person by nature, and I was depressed. And so I knew something was wrong, you know? And so I started my journey there. I started with a therapist. I did all kinds of work, and it really helped me. So I'm growing. So, you know, fast forward, of course, a lot of things happen, but it's a short podcast, right? So we won't go into all of them. And I have four children. I raised them mostly on my own. I got into real estate. I stayed in the real estate business for many years, like 30 years or so. And I mostly managed offices, or I was a regional president at the end of my career. I owned my own office for a little while, loved real estate, but I always thought if I could be, I used to think I wanted to be a therapist because it was so helpful to me that I wanted to sort of give back in that same kind of way. But I don't even have a college degree. I got married at 18 and had my first baby at 19. I don't have a college degree. So the idea with all these single mom with four kids of going to school to get my undergrad and then like a therapist just seemed way too hard.
Yeah. So, I went back. I quit after 3 years. So I never finished either. So, and I always had the same thing in my head as I don't want to go back and start like, when I figured out, I thought I wanted to be a therapist too, but like I was making over six figures and I'm sure you were doing really well in the real estate industry. So you're like, going to like start all the like erasing everything. Cause nothing transfers over really. I mean,
Nothing.
Your personality skills, but you're not going to get paid for those.
Yes, exactly. I used to think I wanted to be a lawyer too. And I got to the point where my youngest went off to college. I'm like, finally, I could actually go pursue a law degree. And I had a very good friend who was a lawyer. He's like, don't do it. You're making more money than most lawyers doing what you're doing in real estate. Like just stay there, you know? So
yeah, I had somebody who worked for me. I was a manager at a software development company. She had spent $100,000 on her law degree.
Yeah.
She was a project manager, never used it, That's like a bad investment.
Yeah, really. There's a bad ROI there.
Yeah.
So I, you know, then time passes and coaching kind of got to be a thing, right? Because being a life coach is sort of a newer thing. And I really found out about it, like it's a real profession, through Dr. Martha Beck.
Love her.
Familiar with her. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I read one of her books and I went on her website and I love the book. It's still probably my favorite of hers. It's Finding Your Way in a Wild New World.
Oh,
I love that one. Yeah. She writes a lot of it from South Africa at a game preserve where she does retreats every year called Londolozi, which is a whole nother thing. I'm so obsessed with this place. But anyway, I went on her website just to find out more about her. And at the top in the navigation, I saw, you know, like find a coach, become a coach. And I was like, become a coach? Like she does coach training, you know? And so it was like, here's an answer. This to me is even better than being a therapist. No knock to therapists. But I really liked the sort of, I don't know if fluidity is quite the right word, but that kind of an idea that coaching gives you versus the more, a little more in a box that some therapeutic models are, you know, we just do this and we ask these, I'll go back to what I said about being aspirational and practical, because being that to me is what being a coach is. It's not just talking about what's a good idea. And trust me, I love lots of therapists. So I'm not, you know, poo-pooing therapy, but coaching kind of plays a little different role. And part of that is that kind of practical, okay, now how exactly do I do this? And I love Martha's work and I loved her style and how she was training coaches. And so I did that, but I still stayed in real estate for a couple of years.
Okay. So I'm going to say, was this like six years ago?
Yeah. So okay. I probably got certified. I finished my training about 8 years ago and then probably because it was July when I finished. So that must've been 8 years ago. And then I certified a year later, probably. It was a little separate process to go get certified. And I was still in real estate and it was in 2018 in June. So we're recording in July. So, you know, 4 years ago that I quit my real estate career and went into coaching full time. And that's when probably the biggest upset, well, I won't say probably, we can take that word away. Absolutely the biggest upset of my whole life. And I had had my fair share of ups and downs.
What caused you to quit? Was it like, I'm just going to go all in and I'm going to make it work? Or was it, I'm fed up with this job and I'm draining. I only have so much time left in my life to do what I love. What perspective were you coming from?
It's a great question. I'm very much an all in kind of person. I'm pretty comfortable with taking risks, especially when I'm the one in charge. I don't necessarily want to jump off the cliff with other people, but when it's me relying on me, you know, and this might be part of why I've also been single for 20 years. I don't know. But anyway, that's another conversation. So part of it was I really wanted to be all in on my coaching business. But in my mind, I thought I was going to be, this was when I was a regional president for this real estate company. And I thought, well, I'm going to do that for about 3 years and then segue into coaching full time. It'll give me more time to save up money, have a cushion, da, da, da. It seemed so reasonable to me. And then a very bizarre set of circumstances happened. And I actually got like removed. I mean, we could say I got fired. The company didn't say that. And the company kept me on for another 6 months because they knew. Anyway, it was just kind of, it was a really bizarre thing. And I kind of became the scapegoat for a leadership decision. And
kind of like you were canceled. That's what they would call it.
Yes, it was
right?
A little like being canceled.
Gaslit.
The president was coming in, you know, like the company had a lot going on. And anyway, I had a great long-term relationship with this company. So it was all completely unsettling. I mean, it just never in my wildest dreams could I have guessed that was coming. But it was interesting. And hopefully your listeners can relate and you may as well. About 3 months before that happened, I was in a retreat and I happened to be in Paris, but that just makes it extra good, you know? And the leader was having us do this exercise kind of thing and, you know, ask for a message, you know, one of those kinds of deals. And the message I got was that I needed to leave real estate sooner than I was planning on and do coaching full time. And like, it really almost like scared me right in this retreat. I'm just like, no, I want to wait my 3 years and do all this planning. And I'm like, but whatever, nothing was happening then. So I'm like, well, that was interesting. And then 3 months later, I lose my job. And so it just felt like, okay, universe.
Yeah. You're not going to do it. The universe
is going now.
Yeah. I got chills from that. Yeah.
I got a 6 month ramp where I, you know, had the silly job in the company that they created for me, really just to give me a good severance package, I guess, in a way. But so I had that little bit of a ramp up, but then June I left and I'm full time and I don't have a lot of resources. I had $10,000. And all the positive attitude you could hope for. And I had gotten into masterminds. I had already done some one-on-one business, like online, building an online coaching practice. And I'm a strong entrepreneur anyway. So, I mean, I had all my ducks in a row and
investing
yes,
in what you're building. It's kind of like, you need to do that up front sometimes.
I was blogging all the time. I was, you know, had launched my first program. I was doing all the things. I was like the picture of best practices for building an online coaching business. And I will tell you, building an online coaching practice is exactly the same as building a real estate business. And that's what I had been doing my whole life, was either building my own real estate business or helping others build theirs. And so I'm like, I got this. And I'm going to be that six-figure coach in my first year. And no worries. I was so totally confident. And it was like, nothing I did worked. Nothing. I did all the things and nobody bought anything. You know, no, it, of course, some people bought some.
Not enough to sustain you.
But nowhere near enough to sustain me. But I kept believing because it felt I had, this is a time in my life, and this had never happened to me, where I had a very clear inner calling, but what was showing up on the outside was not supporting it. It was like, I'm getting all no's out there, but inside I'm still feeling the yes. And so I very consciously chose to keep following my inner yes, even though everything in my body screamed, you know, go get a job, go back to real estate. Just like, this is not working. I'm going to have to try it again another time. But I didn't want to deny what felt like the truth in my heart. And so I kept going to the point that, I mean, I gave up my apartment because I could see that I was running out of all my reserves and I didn't want to be evicted.
Not to interrupt your train of thought, but do you think that the universe tests us?
I don't. So I'm resistant to that word, but sure. It's a great way to say it.
Yeah.
Because
it's like saying, how bad does she want this? Or how convicted is she in this?
And for me, there was, again, I get the benefit of hindsight today. Mm-hmm. So it's really easy for me to see now. It was harder for me to see it in the moment. I went through 3.5 years of just intense struggle. I didn't have my own home for 2.5 years. I was couch surfing with my adult children. I lived with a friend. I was in really inexpensive Airbnbs when I had some cash so I could do, I mean, it was ridiculous. And I'm, you know, like 57, 58, 59, 60 years old. I mean, this is not when you want to, I mean, who wants that? But in your 20s, I think you can deal with it better, right?
So did you sell all your furniture?
I sold almost everything I had. All my belongings were in the smallest pod that the pod company makes. I think it was 7x9 or something like that. And that was in storage. And so
I have to say is I am super impressed with your conviction. I'm super impressed with your desire to continue to move forward with your calling. That's pretty impressive.
Desire. Thank you. And that, so desire and tenacity, I think, are two of my greatest strengths. And something that maybe you alluded to earlier, but I'll put a word on it, which is ambition. Because I actually feel, and even through this, that time, felt more ambitious, more driven to grow this business and serve as many people as I could get to than I have felt my whole life. Even though I've always been very ambitious and I've done a ton of things, but my drive and ambition is probably even stronger now.
And I would add resilience. I would add resilience to that.
Lots of resilience. Yeah. Because and I love my home. I mean, I am a domestic goddess. So it was not that it'd be easy for anybody to go without a home for 2.5 years, but it was so incongruent with how I saw myself. I love money. Like, I'm just like, how is this my life? But every time I would get scared or sick of it, angry, and want to just go get a job, be just like, I'm just going to go back. And I did it once. I'm like, I'm going to go back to Pennsylvania. That's where my license is, my real estate license. I'm going to get back into real estate. I know tons of people there. And it just didn't feel right. I did it some. I still have a little side hustle that I do that's real estate related. But anyway, I just wanted to follow my heart, even though my environment wasn't supporting it. and it came at a great cost, but I felt like somewhere in it would be the lesson that would be worth it. Mm-hmm. And of course it was, because part of what I found were a ton of limiting beliefs, lots of scarcity, you know, mindset and things like that, that were not unfamiliar to me. It's not that I had not dealt with them earlier in my life. I had, and I really thought I had, whatever, tackled them. It was done. I was good, you know, and here they all were again. And so it gave me that deeper way of clearing those thoughts and feelings and the energy of all that, which I think makes me 100 times better as a coach today than I was even 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. So what was the biggest lesson?
I think the biggest thing that I learned, which is, you know, the lesson, I guess, is I learned how to feel. Okay, so let's stop for a second and talk about feelings and thoughts, right? Because I'm big on mindset, but mindset has to be congruent with your thoughts, or it doesn't really help. So this is why affirmations a lot of times don't work, because if I'm broke and I'm saying to myself, I'm abundant, I'm wealthy, whatever, because that would be the mantra, right? That's where I wanted to go. But I can't feel it. If it's absent feelings and my feelings, in fact, are of fear and scarcity, I can mantra myself to death and it won't matter. Because it's when we get our feelings and our thoughts congruent with each other that our state changes. You know, you think about Tony Robbins, who was to me the first person to really talk about, you know, changing your state. So what I learned to do, what I got very good at, was creating my own state, my own feelings and thoughts that were congruent and were abundant when my environment was completely the opposite. And it's an amazing quality that we all have, and we've all done it in certain ways. But we can, you know, mine was just like, you know, feet to the fire there. And I had to do it for a long time. So it got me really good at how can I get myself in a state of feeling abundant and having abundant thoughts and believing in possibilities when I have $50 in the bank and I'm Googling a homeless shelter this afternoon because I don't know that I'm going to be able to stay in an Airbnb tonight.
So did you use mantras? Did you use affirmations, but you just like whittled them down? What would have been an example of something that you would have used that would have made your thoughts and feelings congruent?
So one is to get the feeling of abundance, because abundance, we tend to think about it as how much money is in the bank.
Right.
But I couldn't do that. So I had to think about, what does abundance feel like? And how do I kind of get that feeling? How do I embody it? It's a very physical, you know, our feelings are very physical things inside our bodies. And so I wanted to feel it. And then I would think, okay, so what is an abundant person thinking? And part of it for me, and I think this is a really powerful part of it, I do it all the time with clients, is now I have to be there and not escape my situation. So my situation's the same. I have $50 and I don't have a place to stay tonight. Okay. So what is a person? So I would think of somebody like Elon Musk or Richard Branson or Oprah or somebody. I'd be like, okay, if somebody took all their money away tomorrow, I bet they're thinking something different than I'm thinking. You know, and I've got to find that. I've got to make it up, right? So what would I be thinking? And so that was the kind of game I would play with myself. And I did it mostly out in nature, because I find, and I'm not really an outdoorsy kind of person. I'm very comfortable at the Four Seasons. but being
on the balcony, maybe
on the balcony. Yeah. Sit out on your balcony. Yeah. When you're in nature, it's very easy for your mind and then your feelings to catch all the abundance that is around you.
Yes.
Right. The abundance of trees, the abundance of grass. I was often during a lot of this time, I was in Southern California, near like more San Diego, sometimes up here near LA, a little north of where I live. And so I could get to the beach. I usually had enough gas money, you know, that was sometimes precarious, but anyway, I'd get myself to a beach where there was free parking lot, you know, cause I couldn't afford to pay a meter, and walk and just walk on that beach. And so the ocean and the vastness of it, you know, that all added to it for me. But for other people, it would be the mountains, or it would be, you know, something else. It doesn't matter what it is, but nature just sort of opens us up to thinking in a broader way about abundance. And I would just go and wash out. So my thing I do with all my negative thoughts, all the thoughts that we're saying that, you know, you've done everything wrong.
You're a loser.
Lots of shame. Yeah. Lots of shame around being a six-figure earner for a bunch of years and then being so broke you don't have a home.
Yeah.
Okay. Plenty of shame around that. Plenty of shame around I must not be good at my, you know, marketing, or I knew I was a good coach, but I'm like, okay, so I must suck at all this other stuff I'm doing because nobody's buying my services. You know,
yeah, you didn't sign up to, you know, that's one of the frustrating things. Who signs up to be a marketing person? You know, I don't like that part of it. I just want to coach people.
I know. I just want to coach people. So true. Yeah.
And so, then probably too, like, what kind of a role model am I? Because even though we have adult kids, we know they're watching. And then,
oh, for sure. Yeah. Oh, I'm just like, oh my gosh, my kids must be so embarrassed by me. Of course they're not, but you know, all of that is right. So my favorite tool for all that self-judgment, self-criticism, I learned in my coach training from Byron Katie. If you're
familiar. Oh yeah, I love her. She had the brain injury, right?
She was just super depressed.
Oh, okay.
And woke up one morning knowing that everything that she was so stressed about, like she was living in a halfway house because she was suicidal. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And just woke up one morning with a cockroach wandering across her foot and just knew that everything that was so stressful and upsetting to her was about her thoughts and her arguing with reality, right? That it shouldn't be that way, kind of a thing. Those, these are my words to describe it. And she came up with a process she calls the work, and it's four questions.
Oh yeah.
Which are, is it true? You know, and then is it absolutely true? And what would you be thinking? What do you think and feel when you believe it's true? And then what would you think and feel if you did not? So I would do that. I only have $50 in the bank. And even though I could show you my checkbook and prove that was true, like, it doesn't matter whether you answer yes or no to, is it true? But a lot of times what we're feeling and thinking is not true. We're projecting it. It's in the future, whatever. So a lot of times you have to go to, well, no, I don't know for sure it's true, but even.
Or you could always say, is it always going to be that way or something like that, you know?
Yeah. And so even whatever I got to, if I could ask myself, so who would I be in this exact same situation, but I'm not believing the story I'm telling myself, because the $50 is not the problem. The problem is all the things I'm saying to myself about why I only have $50, right? Yeah. It's all that shame. And so that's how I would start to like invoke, like, what would somebody else be thinking? Because they would say, and I've heard plenty of really abundant mindset people say this, like they lose everything, they go broke, they lose everything on a business venture, whatever. It's just like, yeah, well, I'll just start over and make it again. I'll make it again. I did it once. I can do it again. And so I would just start to invoke those kinds of things. Yep, I can do it. I can, it doesn't matter. When I look back, look how many millionaires have spent their time living on a park bench. I don't care. I care about the future. I care more about where I'm going and who I'm becoming than I care about the momentary discomfort of where I'm at, because in the trajectory of my life, what's it going to be?
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually something I teach. It's a lesson I do about, you know, you basically went from the doing to the being. I mean, you shifted, being. You still did stuff,
yes.
But you did it from a place of your, what you wanted to be, who you were working towards, the future you. And
yes,
that's super
who am
powerful.
I becoming? Yeah, yeah. I love the question, what's seeking to emerge?
Yeah.
And I used to ask myself that all the time, because that would get my mind out of the trap of running around with my, whatever my problem was that day with my money, and into something much bigger. And as soon as we can open up to possibilities, then even how I can look at what am I going to do today with $50 becomes a different internal conversation than where it started.
Yeah. Yeah. When did you start to notice the shift where $50 became $100 and $100 became, yeah. When did you notice when that actually shifted, or
was like the real money shift? Okay. So the real money shift happened right about when COVID hit, actually. And some of it was because of the side hustle I took. My coaching business, I would say, really got more traction about the same time, but maybe more like winter, you know, as we were starting to come out of our deepest isolation, you know, staying at home stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, with an online practice, it's hard to know how much COVID hurt, and my business was so new.
Yeah.
But certainly in the last year to year and a half, I've experienced a lot more momentum. But I got in my apartment a year ago. So I had built up enough income and
That's
recovered
nice.
My
Looks credit nice.
Score and all those things, you know, to get an apartment. And so it's just such a joy. I'm 2 blocks from the beach, which is amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
And I hope you have a couch. So if your kids ever have a need to pay back.
I can let someone surf on my couch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been, you know, a year or so since I've really felt the relief of it, you know, but of course it was a slow process moving forward. But again, I'm a very fast mover. So for it to take a year for my income to recover was infuriating to me, because that's like forever to me. Because I just happened to move pretty fast. And I've never had a slow ramp up in my professional and earning life the way this has been. Mm-hmm. So again, it was very new territory.
Did you learn how to be a little bit more patient, do you think? Because I've always been like very impatient. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish it happened yesterday. And I get the sense, because a lot of ambitious people are kind of impatient people. So it seems like you might have learned that a little bit.
I guess I think the way I would say it is I accept it better.
Yeah. Cause walking on the beach is not something a patient person will do.
Right.
I was not good at like relaxing and going for a walk.
Yeah. Yeah. So I learned how to relax before all this happened. But I was doing it in a very work hard, play hard. Like I'm going 100 miles an hour and then I go zero, you know, and I sit in a chair on the beach and I read a book for a week or something. So I got that. But, and I'm not sure I'm very good at being patient, but I have learned to tolerate it. I've learned that. And I guess the reason why is I've not really thought about it this way until you asked me that question. I know that the part of me that wants to push and make it happen faster is not serving me. And that back to the doing versus the being, and especially being a coach, it's so important for me to be congruent with this. I mean, you don't want to show up for a coaching session and I've got this energy of push.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to, that wasn't who I was becoming.
Yeah.
So I just learned to tolerate it as part of the learning curve, I think, of moving from push, 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 do, 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 to being and
allowing
action out of the being and allowing.
Mm-hmm, yeah, that's so good. Love that. Yeah, this has been great. I really enjoy. Well, you're clearly enjoying some of the sun because you look awesome. Yes. You have such a tan.
I'm like, I tan easily. We don't pick our skin, you know, so I was lucky in the skin department, but I do love the sun. I do.
I have my skin type is now called brown spots.
So yeah. That's what I
have. Yeah. And I have some things, and it was so cute. My husband, because he's my second husband, and we had a rekindle. So we dated in college and then we got back together like 30 years later.
Oh, cool.
But I wanted to get like my brown spots on my arms, like lasered.
Uh-huh.
And I came home and I said something to him and he goes, "Oh, I like those." And I was like, "Oh, that's so sweet." And I was like, "Okay." And then I'm thinking, but I hate them. So, you know, but they're still there. They're still there.
it's such a good example though, of how we can be so critical about ourselves on something that someone else has, it's become endearing to them, or it's become just like this, you know, part of who we are that they love. And all that is, that's in your head. You know, I mean, I'm not pointing fingers for all of us. Mm-hmm. That's in our head. That's our story.
Yeah.
It attaches to feelings that, you know, don't serve us.
Yeah. It's not helpful.
Yeah. Because helpful even if you were to decide, one of the things that I think is so important is that, and I really just want everybody to hear this, it's not about the decision. It's not about, we'll use your spots. It's not about whether you ultimately decide to do that or not. It's from where within you does that decision come from? Because you could decide, I'm totally in love with my body. And I get, my husband even thinks these spots are adorable, right? But for me, I'm ready to have that gone. You know, I don't want it. Okay. That's a different decision than a body critical. Oh, those ugly. Oh, you know, and we do that in our lives in all kinds of ways where we think, well, if I'm super critical, somehow I'm going to be better at this or whatever. And it's never about this. It's how we come at it that is whether or not it's really stressful. We can do all manner of very difficult things without a lot of what we would describe of as stress when we're doing it out of that alignment.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, surprisingly so that this time I was in many ways and on many days, I would not have described it as stressful. I would have, you know, just to mince words and because our language overlaps and whatever, I would have said it was difficult. Like it was hard work to do that, but stress, anxiety is kind of a different thing because I stayed so in alignment with what felt like my calling and my heart, what my heart and soul wanted. It was just like, yeah, this sucks. And it's really hard. But it felt different than the stress that fear and anxiety creates.
Yeah, because I think that if it was stressful, you probably would have gotten sick because that's usually what happens.
And, never had so much of a cold.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Isn't that interesting?
The whole time. And I was not taking care of myself. I mean, I'm eating the cheapest food.
That stores well on next to a couch.
Somebody's got, because all I had was a little cooler for my front seat.
Oh my God.
Because I had everything that wasn't in that pod, suitcases, clothes, books, my work stuff were all in my car. And I drive a Mustang. I mean, I don't have an SUV. I have a convertible, you know? So there's only a little bit of room in there.
Well, you have a book in you if you haven't started one.
I know. I need to do
seriously.
My first book that I've written, it'll publish soon, is for a self-coaching practice, kind of a framework for self-coaching that I call the Solvent Method. So I want to get that one done and on the shelves, and then I'll do the memoir. I needed a little distance from some of that, you know,
Before I was ready. That's interesting. I'm doing a book. It's half written, but on my framework, but I wanted to write a book about my story about me rekindling my husband with him. Yeah. And it was so funny because I had this really great idea of doing like a chicken soup for the soul, but it's like rekindles at a late in life rekindles and like doing little vignettes of different stories. You know, wouldn't that be cool?
I love that. Yeah. I love that. And I love writing. I love the process of putting this book together. I will definitely, there will be more books for me.
That's so cool. Yeah. Well, it's been great talking to you. I enjoyed the conversation so much. And thanks for being patient with me. I've got
It's been wonderful. Thank you so much. Yeah.
And we didn't even get to talk about your, well, I'll have to have you back on, but the make sure you tune in to her Liberate Your People Pleaser. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure people pleasers will go looking for it.
Yeah.
I love that you have a, you know, I like, don't you run out of topics? But I mean, to have a whole podcast on that, that's great.
People pleasing impacts every area of our life. Oh. So there's plenty to talk about. 100 episodes. I haven't worn out.
That's awesome. Topics, so. Do you do them weekly?
I do them weekly. Okay. And then I do a fair amount of reels on Instagram. I think I'm going to start here. You are the first to know. I'm going to start a weekly Instagram live that I'm going to call Own Your Brilliance with Brenda.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so that'll be coming in August.
Handle on Instagram? It'll be in the show notes, but
Brenda Florida Coach. It's just all one word, Brenda Florida Coach.
That's easy.
Okay. Yeah. Cause of all things, somebody has my name.
Yeah. I just had an idea of starting something similar and calling it Not Your Average Nuggets.
Oh, nice. Love that.
People want like, what's a nugget? But a little nugget, a little short nugget. All right.
Yep.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Lori.
All right. Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at notyouraveragegrandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average life.